Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to, I think this is the final session of the second day of InfoSec. Today we got a panel for you on securing the cloud. The title that InfoSec gave it was Securing the Cloud 4.0. So those who can remember back to the days of Internet 2.0 will realize that things have been moving along a bit. And that's what we're going to talk about today, new approaches to protect data in the cloud. And I'm delighted to introduce our panel of experts we have here. I'll start on the right, ladies first. Anne Johnson, who's a VP at Microsoft at their Advanced Cyber Security Group. Then we have Mark Jones, speaking in his capacity as a CISO, CISO, Chief Information Security Officer, from the legal firm Allen & Overy. Then next to him, we have Anton Karpov, who's also a Chief Information Security Officer, a CISO, from Yandex. And he will tell you better than this, but Yandex is like Russia's Google. And then finally, last but not least, we have Daniel Catedo, if I pronounced that correctly. They can tell you their own names better than I can pronounce them in a moment. And he is a CTO, Chief Technical Officer, at the Cloud Security Alliance, which is an industry body. Now, I'll get each of the panelists to say a little bit more about themselves. So, Anne, if you'd like to introduce yourself and Microsoft and your take on cloud security.
Sure. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining us. So, I run a lot of different groups at Microsoft, but for the purpose of today, I have our global enterprise cybersecurity business as well as our cybersecurity practices within my remit. Microsoft obviously is very committed to security from everything from on-prem with our Windows and our server platforms all the way through the cloud, Azure, Office 365, our Dynamics solutions. And we're really focused on bringing in as much capability built into the platforms as well as bringing in as much capability as we can fully integrated with third-party partners that we'll manage with our Azure Security Center, and finally being able to do end-to-end threat detection across the stack. So when I say across the stack, that's on-premise through our cloud properties and also through your hybrid cloud environment. So we're focused both on the product development, the integration, and also on our partnerships and our relationships with our third parties.
Okay, thanks very much, Anne. And Mark, if you could tell us a bit about your role at Allen & Overy.
So I'm Mark Jones. I'm a global CISO for Allen & Overy, which is one of the largest legal services firms in the world operating on a global basis. And I'm responsible for technology risk and for information security for the firm. I suppose my perspective's probably broken down into four takes around cloud. Firstly, I think agility, where I think you can see the software industry starting to write for cloud first, which obviously means from a technology risk point of view, there are actually some benefits, I think, in terms of cloud adoption. Secondly, in terms of transparency, where I think that there's probably a way to go, and I'm sure there will be discussions around this, around the degree of transparency that cloud offers. Certainly, I'm part of an industry where there's heavy client-centered auditing and intervention in terms of transparency, so we're keen to see providers providing that. I think in terms of security, my perspective is really focused on two pieces of technical subject matter. The first is an independent cryptographic model, or bring your own key, as some of you may be familiar with calling it. And I think the second is situational awareness integration, because in a lot of cases, we're integrating cloud with an existing estate. Not in my case, my firm's not adopting cloud, but I think that would be a normal model. And therefore, I think being able to get that SIEM integration, log feed integration, to be aware of your whole estate, including cloud, is very important.
Okay, interesting. Yeah. That the concept of a cloud-first development model for security.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Anton, perhaps you could tell us what Yandex really does.
Right, thanks. Good afternoon, and thanks for joining our session. So I run security at Yandex, which is, the biggest engineering company in the whole Eastern Europe, I think. So we run the most popular search engine in Russia, and we also run the most visited website. So to us, the challenge about basically dealing with cloud is that, as we are pretty big, we have like few hundred thousand of hardware servers, and like about 6,000 employees, at least half of them are engineers. So when we realized that we need to basically be more efficient in terms of how we use our hardware resources. We realized that, you know, basically when you talk about cloud, you're not necessarily talk about, you know, going to some cloud vendor and buying and set up an account there. But you might also build your own cloud. Like, for example, you can take open source products like OpenStack or Docker, and you need to migrate to it. So I apologize if I will be maybe too technical in some points, but to us, the biggest challenge was actually to migrate, to build our own cloud. We decided to write everything from scratch. This is, you know, all sort of our culture. But to us, the biggest challenge was actually to migrate our existing hardware infrastructure to the cloud, because when you build cloud on premises, you basically add additional layers of like management interfaces. You need to basically find out what solution you will start with. Like, either you will be using proper hypervisor virtualization software, or you just go with some lightweight things like, you know, Docker containers, and your existing security tools might not apply there. So this sort of things which we needed to take into consideration when we started to move to our own cloud, well, like a few years ago from now.
So just to be clear, when you talk about Yandex moving to the cloud, that is moving to your own cloud infrastructure.
Yes.
And do you resell that cloud infrastructure to customers as well?
We do have a business, actually. It's the same code base, you're right. Yeah. So we just recently started that sort of business. But this is something we built from scratch for ourselves.
Okay.
And then we decided that, you know, we are in a good position to actually act as a vendor here and basically sell it cloud services.
Okay, thanks for that clarification, Anton. And finally, Daniel, if you could tell us a bit about your role as CTO at the Cloud Security Alliance and why
Sure.
the Cloud Security Alliance is so important to all these people in the room.
With pleasure. So Daniele Catteddu, that would be the right way, but you got an excuse there. My role in, so first of all, the Cloud Security Alliance, for those of you who don't know CSA, we are a not-for-profit organization, membership-based. Since today everybody's the biggest in something, I guess we are the biggest information security community in the cloud space. We got about 85,000 individual members, 300 corporate members, being Microsoft one of those. And since 2009, we have been devoting ourselves in creating research and best practices to support the community to have a safe journey to the cloud. What we do is basically open source and free of charge, so whatever we produce is freely available on our website. What we have been dedicating ourselves the most is to create guidances, so to make sure that from one side, cloud service provider could implement the right security approaches and methodology within the cloud space, and at the same time, to provide tools for cloud customer to make informed decisions, basically, to be able to assess and verify who is going to be the right choice for them, what is going to be the right solution, what are the cases in which cloud is the answer, and in which cases cloud it might be not the right answer.
Okay.
In that space, my role is essentially to support our research team in identifying which are the right trends we should be paying attention to, and then on the receiving ends to make sure that we can take the paper-based research and then to make it more enforceable. In my portfolio, for instance, there is also everything that goes under the education of individuals as well as the certification of cloud service providers.
Okay, thanks very much for that, Daniel. So we've got a really excellent panel here. Trying to step on that bottle of water. Really excellent panel here because we've got a VP from one of the world's biggest internet companies, which Microsoft is. We've got two CISOs, one from an end user organization, one from a cloud scale company, Yandex, and we got an industry body to talk about the issues of cloud security. But we'd really like to know during this session what you think. So we've got today a panel question for you all to respond to. I think you've got some sort of button on your seats or something. So we can get the panel question up. This is it, and we're going to ask you this question twice. We're going to ask it now, and then we're going to ask you to answer it again at the end. So the questions are, the three options here, you can only choose one of them. Do you think that public cloud platforms are more secure for deploying applications than in-house platforms? Or do you think that there is little difference in the security of public cloud platforms and in-house ones, it depends only on how the applications are deployed? Or number three, do you think that it's still the case that in-house platforms are, that in-house platforms are more secure for deploying applications than public cloud platforms? They just switched order there. So all have a vote on that. We'll take note of what you've said, and we'll see if we can make any difference to your views during the session today. So, well, 59%, 26%, 16%. Anybody left to vote? 26. Interesting watching it go up and down. But overwhelmingly, this audience, more so than even Leave voters, 55% of you say that public cloud platforms are more secure for deploying applications than in-house platforms. It's going down a bit. We're bang on 52% now. 25%, 25%. So that's the sort of order. About half of you going for, it's a really positive approach if you're a pro-cloud sort of person, that cloud platforms are more secure for deploying applications, and the rest of you split half and half roughly on makes no difference. We prefer in-house, thanks very much. Changing a little bit. We'll leave that there for the time being. Now what we're going to do, we're going to, in the time we got today, run through four topics with the panel, getting to give their view on each. Now, if you want to ask questions, I think you've got a capability somewhere on your devices to enter questions, and they will come up on the screen in front of us. And each of these four themes we're going to go through today will address any questions at the end of each theme as they come up, okay? So the first theme that I'm going to get the panel to talk us about is the life cycle for adopting cloud services. Now, when you go to deploy a new application that your organization needs, whatever it happens to be, CRM, email, some mission critical application, whatever it is, you've got to decide first of all what sort of application you want, and then if you decide that it's appropriate to look at cloud services, want to understand the steps the experts here, the panelists, would recommend for going through to select a cloud service. And we're going to ask them to talk about when a cloud service is more or less secure than an on-premise one, to address the question that you yourselves have just looked at. So the life cycle for adopting a specific cloud service, I don't know if one of you wants to start off on that or... Okay, so we'll start off.
So I just suggest one element of looking at cloud adoption is to understand the sensitivity and value of the data that you're considering in hosting or processing through cloud, and certainly my experience has been that outside governmental environments, very often organizations don't have particularly sophisticated or well-developed and embedded data classification capabilities. So I think there's a real challenge there as we look at cloud more to go back and look at the value and sensitivity of the various sets of information within our organization. And I think then, Bob, that becomes part of this deliberation in terms of what to put on cloud and what not to put on cloud.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Got some thoughts around that. So what we find on our traditional customer journeys when they go to the cloud is they look at their business applications in two ways, internal facing and external facing, assuming they have an external facing application. And then they look next at regulatory environment, right? Is there a particular regulatory environment or regulatory driver that's going to prevent them from moving things sooner rather than later? What we find with most of our customers, and it was interesting from the survey, is that we're hearing more and more, and something that I've said before, is that the cloud is more secure not because of technology, but because we have negative unemployment in cybersecurity. You simply can't hire the people. So a lot of folks are moving applications to the cloud more quickly because they need because of security, purely because of security, because they want the cloud vendors to have to take responsibility for the security, and they can have their employees do higher level tasks. So that to the extent you can move on a maturity curve, things that are less regulated, maybe your internal email to Office 365, that tends to be a very standard first workload to go to the cloud, by the way. Your internal email tends to be a standard first workload. And then if you think about things like government or financial services or heavily regulated environments, the maturity curve goes along so that eventually you get those regulated applications moved to the cloud. And then finally, even in our own environment at Microsoft, there's probably 5 to 10% of our applications that were simply never are going to move to the cloud for whatever reason. It doesn't tend to revolve as much, believe it or not, around data security as you may think. It tends to revolve more around compliance and more around super critical infrastructure of keeping the lights on. If I move this application to the cloud and something happens to my cloud provider, does it stop me from doing business for, say, a 90-day period? And is there too much business disruption, right? That tends to be that 5 to 10% driver, as opposed to the data security when you get out of government. When you're in government, there's a whole different standard that is applied. So I'm thinking about customer journeys globally, by the way. And they're, believe it or not, pretty consistent globally, but they all have unique regulatory environments.
That's interesting that you say it's down to a cyber skills thing. So what are you talking about there is the shared security model. The cloud service provider provides security up to a certain level, allowing the customer to focus on security above that level.
Correct.
And if that's Office 365, it's all the way up to the application use in the case of Microsoft.
Correct.
Does Yandex see a similar thing?
Yes. So, well, actually, I wanted to answer exactly the question we had on the top. Really, really nice question about the security challenges, because this is what you face when you move some part, or like in our case, 100% of your entire infrastructure to the cloud. So I would say three most important things, or at least what we experience in terms of security challenge, is that first of all, you need to make sure that, well, when you move to a cloud, there is an additional level of complexity you start to have, basically managing your cloud installations, and it should have some API or something like that. So basically the way how you access your, well, virtual machines, or like basically your installation in the cloud, changes, and you need to realize that once the attacker got access to the management interface, basically he can do whatever he wants. He can deploy code to any host you have in the cloud, something like that. So I guess challenge number one is to make sure that management layer is properly secured. The second thing, and especially the guy asking about the hybrid cloud, you have to be very careful in basically providing access to your corporate network from the cloud. Well, all the vendors, they have solutions for that, but you have to keep in mind that either it be some sort of VPN or anything like that. You have to remember that, for example, key management is maybe more difficult than you think. Like, for example, one of the things which I remember once had, you have all your data, sensitive data, encrypted in the cloud, but where you store the key, how you access that data, how you decrypt the data, how you manage your encryption keys is also the challenge from my perspective. So these are, I guess, two important things.
Okay, right. Thanks very much for that, Anton. We'll go finally to Daniel from the Cloud Security Alliance. And Daniel, there's a question come up here. We're talking about the cloud adoption lifecycle. And one of the questions that came up down there is about exiting, something to do with exiting a cloud service provider. So the cloud adoption lifecycle, you choose to adopt a cloud service, you choose to run with it, maybe you've chosen Microsoft, and at the end of the day you decide, well, maybe Microsoft is not for us. I'm sure that never happens.
Never.
But but as part of that lifecycle, what happens when you need to move away from a cloud service? Does the Cloud Security Alliance have advice on that?
Well, this is something that it should be planned in advance. I mean, moving towards the cloud and picking your cloud service provider without an exit strategy, I guess, is kind of foolish in the first place. So that's part of the necessary strategy and the necessary due diligence that you need to do in the first place. You mentioned in the beginning, or like a few seconds ago, about cloud in general. Now, to me, what is important to understand and to highlight is that not all the clouds are the same. And making an assumption, looking at the cloud as a monolith, it's kind of wrong. Yeah. Each one of the components, each one of the cloud layers, should be looked at and put into a consistent architecture in an independent way. If you are ready to bring into your own hybrid solution, a SaaS application, it doesn't mean that the same that is like an assessment that you're doing for the type of solution transversely. something that I believe it's important that once the requirements are on the table, as you were mentioning earlier on, and you understand which is the right architecture and which, what are the right solutions, then it comes to the point for a further assessment to figure out if there is any gap, and in case there is a gap, how you can put in place a strategy for developing the right countermeasures. I saw there a number of quotes to existing standards. I saw quoted ISO 27001, 2718, our cloud control matrix. Those are tools that indeed can be used to figure out if the security posture of a certain cloud service provider is the right one, is providing you the right level of assurance, the right level of transparency, as you were mentioning in the beginning of your opening remarks. So those are a number of factors that it should be considered.
Okay, thanks very much for that, Daniel. Before we move on to the next theme, there's a couple of other interesting questions come up. One we can't ignore because nine people have favorited it or whatever we're doing, thumbs up here. GDPR. Now, we all know GDPR is coming and it's going to include us guys in the UK because our decisions about leaving the European Union are further distant than that. But anyway, GDPR is likely to remain the data protection law in the UK as well as across Europe. What responsibility can you place on cloud service providers for helping you meet the requirements of GDPR, and when is it purely down to your organization? Perhaps one or two of you could comment on that.
Go ahead. I think just pulling out two aspects of GDPR. Firstly, the 72-hour reporting requirement, which is really, to be honest, pretty tight. It's the tightest standard worldwide at the moment in terms of rate of investigation and reporting. I think being able to get help and support for what will be that intense activity of investigation from a cloud provider in order to satisfy the requirement of GDPR post-breach would be great. I'm sure that breaches would never occur, but if they did. And then secondly, I think in terms of right to be forgotten, I think right to be forgotten is a deceptively difficult problem to deal with. Digital systems are all about replicating seamlessly. And what you're trying to say with right to be forgotten is, I've deleted all the data on you that you've asked me to delete.
But a bit of a cloud service provider turns around and says, we can help you with that requirement. That
would be great. That's good. Yeah. That would be fantastic.
Let me comment, then I'll let Daniel make the Uber point.
It can be brief. Got other things to get on to.
A couple quick thoughts. Number one, whatever controls you need from your cloud service provider, whether it be GDPR or anything else, you need to make sure they're both technical and contractual. It's not good enough to have one or the other, right? You need to make sure they can technically perform and they're going to contractually perform. As far as right to be forgotten, it's incredibly difficult because of both system replication and downstream. Right? So you need to actually know where your data is and what rights you have for your data to be controlled within certain regions or certain elements, because that's where right to be forgotten becomes incredibly difficult. And with regard to the funny comment about breach, we actually see 1.5 million attempts in our environment on a daily basis. So we're fending them off, but there are those attempts there.
And briefly, Daniel, you wanted to say something on GDPR.
Well, yeah, very quickly. First of all, I mean, on the contrary, of what many people are thinking, I guess that GDPR is a sort of blessing because it's going to be a key for many of you to go and knock on the door of your board of directors and get some budget for security to start with. And the second is that since the fundamental change with GDPR, it's about accountability, right? And one of the most or the less understood principle of cloud, it's about the concept of shared responsibility, where you need to allocate the right level of accountability and responsibility to the various parties. Now, GDPR is bringing that into a more formal space. It's telling you as a data controller, you need to be in charge. You are in charge. You need to make sure that not only you're doing your part, but you're also making sure that your third parties, including the cloud service provider as a data processor, is doing the right bit. So it's enforcing the idea of accountability that is going to be key for a good security anyway.
Okay. So now we're moving rapidly on through this session. So let's move on to the second theme we've got here. And I'm going to come to Mark first on this because we can also address one of the questions that's come up here, which was about the use of encryption. The number three down there that's got six thumbs ups. It's important for users of cloud services to use encryption and metadata, blah, blah, blah. You can read it down there, sorry. But our second theme was to talk about the operational security steps that can be taken to protecting cloud services in general, including specifics such as bring your own key. So who should be doing the encryption, Mark? Should it be the cloud service provider, or should it be the user before they send data to the cloud?
I'd really build on points from earlier on. I think it depends on the particular industry vertical that you're facing. In terms of particularly large legal services providers, of course, we're doing a lot of work for global financial services, and therefore we're affected by their regulatory stance. So I have to say, mostly from a financial services supply chain point of view, bring your own key is really important. But actually, building on another point just for a second, bring your own key brings a number of challenges. It means that you've got to be really confident about your key handling, because you're effectively fronting up the whole cryptographic model and holding it. The other thing is, I talked about software for cloud first. Of course, if you've got an independent cryptographic model, you need software that's written that will work with that model. So a simple example would be buying some search feature, and for instance, with Amazon, certainly not Microsoft, but with Amazon, the search feature works fine with their own cryptographic model, but if you use bring your own key, the search feature doesn't work. So there's this evolution of software provided for cloud where it needs to work with bring your own key.
Okay, Anton, bring you back in here. What do your users do? Do they, when they're storing data on the Yandex cloud, do they trust you to encrypt it, or do they encrypt it before they send it over to you?
So I'm sure that cloud provider should provide to its customers all the all the ability to operate with encryption data on their own. But at the same time, if you use some cloud provider, you already put some trust in it, right? So we have to offer our customers what to think right for them, but at the same time, they have to realize that already using some third-party cloud provider, they have to have some trust in it anyway. So it's both things.
Thanks very much. Any comments from Anne and Daniel about operational steps to make sure data is protected when using cloud services in general? What do your customers do, Anne, typically?
Yeah, so we offer either bring your own key, hold your own key, or dedicated HSM. All of them have different implementations, and GSFIs for us use dedicated HSM more than bring your own key, by the way, because of the technical implications. It depends on the data set. Mark made a very valid point. It depends on the data set, the regulatory environment, what the customer is dealing with, whether they're going to be comfortable with bring your own key, hold your own key, or dedicated HSM. The one thing that Microsoft, though, does is it's your data. We don't have access to your data. You decide where it is, who can see it, where it's stored, et cetera. So regardless of what those three paradigms in, it's your data, and you need to assign your data policies to it as you would if it were on-prem, the same types of controls.
Okay. I think we'll move on to the third theme, because we've only got about 12 minutes left of this session. And perhaps we'll come back to Daniel on this. I think we can cover this quite quickly, because we've already covered one of the key points here, which is GDPR. But one of the problems with cloud deployments, particularly when you've got a hybrid situation, when you've got on-premise applications, you've got cloud-deployed applications, is achieving audit transparency and meeting operational compliance requirements. Now, we've addressed that in the light of GDPR, but it's a much broader topic than that. People have to meet regulations for their industry, regulations for their national governments, and indeed meet their own internal regulatory requirements. What advice can you offer, Daniel, for achieving audit transparency?
Well, we have been working on this transparency bit since our early days. For instance, we have created 6 years ago now a registry, which is a public repository of information for assessment in order for potential customers to go and check on what a cloud service provider is doing in terms of security posture. Transparency is essential because what we mentioned in the beginning, cloud is remodeling the approach to governance that we are having. It means that you are not anymore in direct control of the information, but someone else is feeding that information to you. And you won't be able to make sure that you are trusting by verifying. So most of the certifications that we are looking out there, seeing out there, they are a very good start, because they are a way for a third party to tell you that eventually that's a good process in place, but that's not necessarily sufficient. If you speak to financial regulators, as you were mentioning them, So from their point of view, the basic principle is security certifications are a necessary condition, but not sufficient. In order to be sufficient, in order for a financial service regulator to give a green light to a bank to move to the cloud, they want to see if they have sufficient evidences so to be able to support the risk assessment. So from that point of view, there is still a lot to do from a number of cloud service providers, not all of them, because a few mature cases like Microsoft are already pushing in that direction. That's true. I mean, they are providing enough information in many cases to the customer in order to be able to determine if a certain statement can be supported by evidences. And that is the case. I mean,
That's a positive endorsement there for Microsoft from an independent industry body. Anne, you must be pleased with that.
But thank you.
Microsoft is an organization that delivers huge-scale cloud platforms and also a lot of on-premise infrastructure. So are you as a vendor able to do any specifically to help your customers achieve audit transparency across hybrid environments?
It's a great question. So contractually, we will comply with whatever is required by your regulators, either in region or by industry. The answer is yes, but we typically will work with whatever third party that our customer works with. We don't do it ourselves, obviously, but we'll work with these centers or EY's or whoever it is you're going to have come in and do that particular audit to make sure that they understand the tooling within the Microsoft environment to get exposure to the right reporting they need to do that type of auditing across your on-prem, hybrid, and Microsoft Cloud environment. We can do it actually holistically.
Okay, great. All right. I think what we'll do now, we'll move on to, I think this is an interesting final topic we got here. We'll move on to that and get you each to give us your views on this before going back to the poll question and getting our audience to tell us what they think. Let's see if there's any other questions come up here briefly before we move on. Let's see, there's one down here with 17 thumbs ups. Let's look at that. What are the top three attack patterns against the cloud environment? All right, who's got a comment on that?
I can do that.
Yeah, over to you, Anton.
So I think
top three.
So number one, which I guess we already covered, is basically management level, that additional layer which creates when you use cloud services. Second thing, actually, I think it's the human factor, actually, the employees, like guys who manage the whole cloud infrastructure, because it might not even about confidentiality, but for example, availability as well, because you have to realize that you have people who basically responsible for managing not only
your data
information.
Okay, so number two, the people, and number three, what's number three?
And I guess number three is when you migrate to cloud, your security tools might not be applied easily, so you have to realize that security risks which you already mitigated by using some solutions you used to have when you used to use a bare metal might not be working. So you have to find some other controls.
I'll give you a quick answer. Okay, Anne, go on, give us a couple.
The top three: phishing.
Okay. Well, that's an interesting one. That's interesting, because what you're really saying there is it's not about the cloud service provider themselves; it's about their users. Given access to, and that's no different to an on-premise application,
that is
because
correct.
It's about identity compromise.
That is
but you
correct.
Wanted to add something.
Well, no, yes, I mean, because human factor, yes, we all know that. But there are two other low-hanging fruits. One is the APIs. I mean, that's the point of interface between the customer and the cloud service provider, and that is, to me, one of the single most used attack vector for cloud. And the second one is identity. I mean, that is where most of the attacks are coming from, after all.
Okay, great. Thanks. There's some other interesting questions come up here, but I picked that one because it had 18 thumbs up. So we'll see if we've got time to address any of these. But I would like to ask the panel to address the final thing here. And what I want them to tell you, tell the audience, and tell me, is how they articulate the benefits of cloud services over in-house deployment to senior management. Now, we've got two CISOs here, so I'll come to the CISOs first. Mark, how have you sold cloud to your senior management and persuaded them? I know you've addressed some of it. Perhaps you can crystallize it.
Just to be clear, we're not adopting cloud, but clearly, obviously, I've had conversations with senior team about cloud technologies. And I would say, firstly, I think there's a great scalability argument to be made in terms of leveraging infrastructures and service organizations of the scale that Amazon and Microsoft are building. Secondly, and I talked to the point earlier on, and you know, I firmly believe in it, I think we're going to see more software providers writing for high-scale computing environments or cloud first, and therefore, in business terms, there's a speed-to-market advantage that one will see over time that will come from having an element of compute capability that's with cloud.
Okay, great. So, Anton, you're also a CISO, a Chief Information Security Officer, so perhaps you'd like to offer us comments on how you would go about setting. I mean, you're a cloud company anyway. I mean, you're a born in the cloud company, so presumably you don't have to sell cloud to senior management. Presumably they're on board. And
well, again, as I said earlier, it all started as when we realized that we need better hardware utilization. You cannot reach proper, efficient resource utilization with bare metal. So, as my part of CISA, I should be, you know, against it because it posed additional security risks. But from a business perspective, the number one point is that when we migrated to cloud infrastructure, we were able to achieve much better hardware utilization.
Okay. Now, Daniel, you're not a CISO. You're not trying to sell cloud to your management, although I suppose the cloud services industry of the Cloud Services Forum the Cloud Security Alliance has to have its infrastructure somewhere. But anyway, because presumably the Cloud Security Alliance is a pro-cloud company at the end of the day. You want people to use cloud. You think it's good for organizations and you think it can be the answer to better security. But how do you help your members get that message across when they're trying to persuade their management to take up more cloud?
So first of all, it's not that we are pro-cloud. We are supporting like a cautious approach to cloud computing.
Okay. Sorry.
Logic says to us that cloud is in most of the cases the best answer to the questions that we are reading from in the market for a number of reasons. And security, you mentioned that in the beginning, is one of them. And you mentioned, and I'm not going to insult all the audience here because this is very obvious. I mean, it's a matter of specialization, scale, and having specialized resources. And that is a message that is well understood by the boards. The idea of something that is more effective if operating on scale is something that everybody understands. As is something, and the other key point is about making sure that each one of the organization is dedicating itself in doing what is good at. So most of the companies, they are not an IT shop. They are not a security shop. They are there and they're using IT and security as a functional tool to support their businesses. And then I guess what they are keeping on doing, so keeping on exercising and keeping on doing what they are the best at, and then leaving the experts, leaving the IT companies to provide the services.
Okay, thanks very much. And finally on that point, perhaps, Anna, we can come to you because you sit in an interesting position. Microsoft is not born in the cloud company. You've become a cloud company. So you still have a lot of customers with huge on-premise deployments, a lot of customers with huge cloud deployments. When a customer turns up at Microsoft and they're, I don't suppose you get many new customers. Everybody's a Microsoft customer to some level. But when you've got a customer who asks for advice about how to best deploy their next application, how does Microsoft turn around and say, that's a cloud application, that's good for the cloud, and that one I would keep on-premise, I wouldn't touch the cloud for that? I mean, do you give advice on that, or do you take a lead from your customers?
So Mark and Danielle both hit on a really important point, which is we look at cloud. All of our customers are on some type of digital transformation journey. They're getting either disintermediated in the market they're in, they want to bring new products or offerings to market, or they want to go into different geographies that they're not in, and they need to do it really quickly, right? So cloud is a great engine so that they don't have to have core IT resources do it. They're concerned about time to market. They want to get someplace quickly, and And that's how we have these really big cloud conversations. If you think about some of them, I'm not going to name customers, but bigger projects we've done that are very public, they've gone into the cloud because they could execute much more quickly and at much more scale in a different way in cloud and do it securely. They didn't have to worry about building the IT or the security infrastructure to do it. And that's really how we start our conversations around cloud is, what do you want to do with your business? How do you want to grow with your business? And then let's talk about how cloud will enable you to get there more quickly and more competitively than if you didn't deploy cloud.
Okay, thanks for that, Anne. Now, we have got time to address a few more of these questions, and we can see a couple that come up here with 12 votes. So this is an interesting one, actually. When we're talking about evaluating the suitability of different clouds for deploying applications, what do existing standards like ISO 27001 do to help us evaluating the security of cloud? And Mark, you look
keen
to respond.
Well, I think what's great about 27001 is there's just a lot of skill base out there. There are a lot of people that understand it. And to be quite honest, in terms of frameworks, I think just having a common structure that covers, has good coverage across multiple sets of topics within information security is where it's at. And of course, what's great about 27001 is if you're a CISO, it's pretty easy to hire people who understand 27001 into your team. So
okay.
I'm sort of a fan because there's a lot of skill around 27001.
And just whilst you're speaking, we'll move on to the others, yeah. Because the second question down there is, which tools or methodologies would you suggest? Would you suggest 27001 as one of the top tools, methodologies?
Well, I mean, somebody mentioned earlier on that, you know, frameworks are only part of it. That is sort of where I would be. I would say, you know, if you're looking at something and you're not using a framework, that's a bit dangerous.
Yeah.
But is it the only answer? No. But okay. I'd say a framework is a good building block, and 27001 is a good building block.
Okay.
Yeah. May I?
Daniel wants to comment on
that. I would tend not to agree with that.
Okay.
So actually, I would disagree with that.
Okay.
ISO 27001 is it's a very good foundation, as you said. But aiming for the minimum is not what we should be doing. As to testify that ISO 27001 is simply not adequate is that ISO itself has been working in 2017 and 18. So there are a number of, you know, better tools for that. CACA has been working since, you know, a few years to the cloud control metrics, which most of the cloud service provider and governments are using as a framework. So I guess that, yes, I mean, let's be, you know, I want to make sure that people understand that I'm not underestimating the value of ISO 27001, but it's simply not meant to be cloud specific. Using that as a reference point, just because everybody understands it, I think it's dangerous.
So what cloud-specific ones would you recommend beyond 27001?
As I mentioned earlier, the CSA cloud control matrix is it's not our own, it's a community. I mean,
okay.
We didn't build it ourselves. It's an effort done by thousands of people that have been contributing to it. And then there is ISO 27017 and 18, which both are cloud-specific.
More specific for cloud. And what about Yandex?
I just want to add that, you know, taking any standard, we have to understand in the first place that just simply following the standard should not be the goal itself. I mean, any standard would help, but you should not focus on just basically comply with something. And in this case, obviously, cloud security metrics is the most specific thing, but ISO is just as I said, it's a good foundation. But anyway, regardless of what standard you use, you have to realize that it only leads you to this certain way, but there's much more things actually which are not covered by such general standards as ISO, for example.
Okay, is Microsoft Azure 27001 compliant then? You don't know.
Top of my head, no, but I'm gonna make a comment. We could debate standards all day long. I think that when you think about cloud security, and I'll say this as a security practitioner prior to Microsoft days, when you think about security standards, you have a risk management posture, and you have security policies that are built by your environment, your regulatory environment, and your geography, those standards shouldn't change at all when you go into the cloud. So whatever you use for risk management, for policy drivers, and for security, you need to maintain that same level of assurance when you go into the cloud. Whatever you use, whether you use 20001 or you use NIST, we could go down the list. CSA actually does have a really good cloud-specific standard, but it shouldn't change your security posture, and that's what you should be driving towards, and you shouldn't allow for any type of lack in that just because you're moving something to the cloud.
Okay, great. Look, I think we've, through that discussion, addressed the next two questions down there. So what I'm going to ask the guys to do is to get the poll question back up again, if we could. Can we get that back up? Here we go. So we saw what you voted at the beginning of the session. You were about 50% for cloud and 25%-ish for the other two options. Let's see if that's changed at all, whether the machinations of the panel have moved you on this subject. Looking good, looking. Give a moment there for, have any of the panelists got any comment to make on the responses that the audience are giving to their views or to the views on cloud security? In fact, we've got a bit of a change here. Coming in top now is there is little difference in the security of public cloud platforms and in-house ones. That public cloud platforms are more secure is second at 40%. I'm not sure if I got this right earlier, actually. And then in-house platforms are more secure. So the in-house is really low now. What's your comment? It seems to have changed since the beginning of the session. You seem to have carried, I think, the audience forward into a little bit more uncertainty, perhaps. What do you think?
I'm afraid that the percentages are pretty much the same, so it looks like that this panel has been kind of irrelevant in the opinion of the audience.
No, I'm sure not. Any comments on the percentages coming through, Anne, Mark?
I think it's variable enough. I guess the only thing the only thought I'll leave the audience with is the comment I made at the very beginning, which is about people. You know, if anything, move those low-level stuff off, whether it's cloud or MSSP, and get your folks working on high-value stuff. You know, if they're still managing firewalls and routers and things and settings in-house, as opposed to doing really high-end threat management, I don't think you're utilizing the limited set of resources you have properly.
Okay, so any other closing comments from Mark, Anton, or Daniel?
I think that's actually a fair result, because it's all about, again, being a practitioner. It's all about how you actually deploy your application, how actually you configure and run your systems. It's not fair to say that, you know, go to use, like, whatever public cloud, it is secure. There's no such thing as, you know, secure is something. You should put a lot of processes and stuff around this. So it's definitely much more about how you manage this rather than just what you take off the shelf.
Okay, well, I think we're close to the end of the session now, but I think it's definitely been a worthwhile session because 90% of the audience here believe that cloud has a role to play, either that it's a much more secure platform than can be achieved in-house, or at least for many applications it can be. Cloud is a massive part of the way we deploy IT now, and security has to be a massive part of that, so it's a big part of InfoSec. Thanks to our panel today. Thanks to Daniel, Anton, Mark and Anne, thanks very much for their time, and thank you all of you for coming along to listen to them.